So two of the 12 Victoria Cross winners from the war are associated in some way or another with the monuments that I've been involved with.
Just to finish up, last week was Remembrance Day.
Yes.
And I wonder if you could tell me what you personally did. I know you had a busy week last week.
I marched with a group of 24 riflemen as the first event in our move to publicize our anniversary year, with the marching party behind the Legion Color Party from sort of the Union Club area down past the Empress along Belleville Street, and then we placed ourselves in the facing the legislature buildings. I marched down. I then left the group, took a couple of pictures of them in their sort of parade locations, gave the camera back to the fellow who owned it, and then I went over to participate in the laying of a wreath. The wreath was laid behind the Navy's wreath, or the Canadian Armed Forces wreath, and it was a prominent place to be given. And I thank the organizers of Pat Patterson and Doug Hepburn in particular for placement in that order of wreath laying, because it gave us a prominence we would not have had if we'd been parts of a group of three who went forward to raise it. I went forward by myself and placed the wreath, with the accompaniment of a young sailor who handled it and then handed it to me for placement. After that, I had the honor of moving to the saluting base where the lieutenant governor was taking the salute, and behind his honor was Admiral Pyle, Maritime Camp Command Pacific commander, and I, on the other side, behind him again, I stood as a representative of the Queen's Own Rifles. I was dressed that way, and I appreciated the sort of welcome that we seem to have had. I personally got separated from the governor, lieutenant governor, and the admiral, making my way from the cenotaph area to the saluting base area, and I was congratulating or commenting to a member of the Burma Star Association who was also a rifleman after the Second World War. He placed a wreath on behalf of Burma Star, and his capacity to move now is severely restricted. He is quite disabled, but managed with support on either side to go up and place the wreath on behalf of Burma Star. But I had to congratulate him on making the effort, and as a result, I kind of got separated from the move of the other two dignitaries to the saluting base. I don't know how they got there. I suspect they were dropped off by car, but I don't know. In any event, my wife and I had to make our way from the cenotaph area to the saluting base area, which is in the center of the Emperor's lawn. And on the way up, the two of us were really rushing. She got slightly behind me. I was holding hands with her and go back and held hands. And to make a long story short, I got applause all the way from the cenotaph area to the saluting base area, and I kept saying, "No, thanks very much." And they said, "No, no, thank you." And I said, "Well, thank you for coming." I said, "The main act is coming behind. The parade is due any minute, and we're trying to beat it to get up to the saluting base." In any event, there were hands reaching out, and there was clapping, and it was really quite a heartwarming accident from my point of view, because I had originally wanted to go through the crowd. But if I did, I would have taken another 3 or 4 minutes to get there, and I would not have beaten the parade to the saluting base. So one of the organizers said, "Let's take the shortcut." And I said, "What's that?" And he said, "We'll just go up the road." And I said, "Okay." And that's when this reception, more or less, took place. And I must say, it was different and much appreciated. But that was the event that we were using to sort of come out and advertise what we were up to for the next 6 months. Next 5 months, I guess. And that group, there's a picture somewhere of that, but there are some fine old soldiers among it. Now, I don't know whether you want to go any further on this, but...
I think the university would like a release form signed, I'll give you that.
Do you have... I probably have a pen somewhere. I can get it, Caroline.
Okay, it's okay. I've got it here.
You got it?
Yeah.
Okay.
There you are. So your signature just...
I guess there. I better put I, who, eh?
Yeah, that would be good.
Yeah, and you...
And then I sign underneath you at the bottom.
Yeah. Yeah, on the following date. Today is the 19th, I guess.
19th, that's right.
There you go. I think that's it.
That's great. Thank you very much, and thank you so much for speaking with me today.
You're very welcome.
We're going to be still busy for the next number of months with the with the celebrations.
Yeah. I'm as busy with that as I am with our church at the moment. Oh. I'm going to a meeting this afternoon for that.
And you were speaking at a school this morning already.
I was, So there's three things today, but a lot of days are like that, and that's fine. That's my own choosing. I get involved in these things, and I have nobody to blame by myself for the lack of spare time. They are rewarding in their own way, and certainly this morning with the kids, again, was something else. It's great to be among them. And the other school up at Campus View, I had known that principal from another school at another time, and I didn't know where he went, but I now know where he is. And he had 400 kids there and I guess 100 parents. And the children ran that ceremony from start to finish, except for me, a guest speaker for, 10 minutes, and himself for about 4 or 5 minutes at the end. So it really was a great occasion. And the young grade 5 girl who was the master of ceremonies had a great deal of poise in the way she did that. It was just great to see. And so did others who were involved.
Do you speak to the children about the Dutch children?
Yeah, I used that as the story. The principal tipped me off before we went in about his message was going to be about peace. And I said, well, I've got a story I think that's going to fit that. I wasn't sure just what I was going to do, because I didn't know the setting all that well. So he stood up on the stage and did his stuff. I didn't. I stood down among the kids. The kids were all the children present were sitting on the gym floor, including some of the teachers. Some other teachers stood along the side wall. But in the back, at the back, were about 5 or 6 bleacher rows of parents. So I didn't want to separate myself from the kids that much by speaking from the stage behind a podium, so I got a portable mic and stood down among them so I could see them and they could see me, and it was great. I came away feeling very much refreshed from both of them, but particularly the first one, because the kids really listened, or seemed to be, and the theme, of course, was the benefits of peace, which come at a cost, and I can cite you a story of dedication and sacrifice, which I then told the story about 18, and concluded again with the emphasis on peace. And I'm not here to talk about the destruction of war. Most of us can picture what that was like. But my own involvement really was, I guess, in a way, how I got into the military was I was 11 years old when my father joined the Army in 1940. And I didn't see him for the next 5.5 years. And I had a younger brother, 2 years younger, and a sister who was 8 years younger than I was. And my mother did a whale of a job on us kids. And when Dad came home, he said, you know, if there's any medals to be given out, I guess Mom should get them. And I think he was right. She had a tough time, but boy, she did it. And the pay of a soldier wasn't very much in those days, and she had a mortgage to boot to pay off. And we got by on very little, but a lot of love, both from her, I guess, and for each other, but also from relatives living in a small town. I was born and raised in Nelson, which is, you know, had a population of about 5,000 at that time, and many, many young men that I knew, mostly through choir involvement. I was a boy soloist in a boys' choir, and the boys' choir had young men in it, 17, 18, 19, 20, and I knew a lot of them. And for a small town, I think the high school honor roll for students that had attended the school had 27 names on it, and that's just school participants. So it was etched in my memory. And of course, the other thing, we were talking about Victoria Cross winners. Next to my grandmother's house, at which we spent a fair amount of time mowing her lawn and doing other things, was a house occupied by the town jeweler. And it turned out that he had two sons in the military during the Second World War. One was an Air Force pilot, the other was a Navy pilot. The Air Force pilot, the youngest of the two, was killed early, like 1942 or 43, in a plane crash in England and returned from a mission. They couldn't bring the plane in safely. The other was the last Canadian killed in August of 45. And that was Hampton Gray, the Victoria Cross winner, who crashed his aircraft into a destroyer in a Japanese naval base. And Gray was the third Victoria Cross winner that I'm connected with in perhaps not quite, well, it's just direct away, I guess, because I knew both the boys as a young kid. I wasn't their age, but Jack had been in the choir as a senior to me. His older brother, Hampton, was just a visitor at home from the times I can recall. But both boys of that family were killed, and the one is remembered by the name given to a school, and of course by the fact that he was not only almost the last person killed in the war, if not the last, but certainly the last Victoria Cross awarded for wartime action. A great guy, a great family, but paid dearly.
I just want to touch on something you said with your father saying that if there are medals to be given out, maybe your yeah. mother deserves one. The idea that some of the early monuments seem to be for the fallen, and yeah. then as the century, you know, 20th century goes on and monuments are created, we see more memorials for those who served, and sometimes for those who were left behind as well, like who stayed at home, in the sense that they also served as well.
Yeah.
Any comments on that?
No, to be honest with you, Carolyn, I haven't encountered that, and I don't know whether it's my sheltered life or what it is, but most of them commemorate either the fallen or the war. And I guess if you're saying that maybe the war includes people who did not serve but who sustained life at home, which was equally as important, I think, as those who served. I'm not so sure it's as important as those who actually died or were killed in the service of the country. If you stretched it to that, I think it's very appropriate that the war be memorialized that way. The fallen restricts, I guess in a literal sense, but I'm not sure it's a real sense, for the sacrifice that was made by others. When I think of wartime, I think of not only my father and the young people that I knew, but I think of my mother and the wives, and there was a lot of them in that small town whose husbands had gone off to war relatively early and were away for fairly long periods of time. There are others, of course, who near the end of the war really almost didn't leave Canada. They served, but they, after their training, there was nowhere for them to go except to remain in the service until the war was ended, and they knew there was no further requirement for them. But I think it's to commemorate the event about as importantly as it is to commemorate the sacrifice of the many. I certainly don't belittle that, but I think it's to the intention, probably more so now than perhaps in the First World War, is to commemorate the event so people recall it and recall what happened, and certainly recall the cost, and thereby honor the fallen. One of my most vivid memories as a youngster was going, and I mentioned it to the school kids today, was going to the Cenotaph in Nelson and seeing the event unfold before me as a 6 or 7 year old when it was commemorating First World War. The Second World War wasn't even on the horizon, at least in my eyes at that time. And I have a very strong recollection of a man named Jim McIver going forward to lay a wreath as the representative of the Legion and veterans of the First World War every year. He was sometimes accompanied by another man who was well known in the area, Major Wallach, who was a major in the First World War. Jim McIver, on the other hand, was not. I think he was a private soldier. And Jim was wounded in such a way through the neck that his head hung down always. And he was asked to lay the wreath, as I say, for a number of years running that I can recall. And I can vividly remember him taking the wreath and going up to the cenotaph, placing the wreath, stepping back, and then he had to throw his whole upper body back to make his head snap back. And he would salute like this, and then the moment he started to move, his head went down again. But the kind of homage that he played and the part he played in the community was vivid in my mind. He amongst others, were involved in not only community support through the Legion, but in community support in other ways by sponsoring a hockey team that I eventually played for. And his name was well known, as of course he was instantly recognizable because he was around the town. His head was always down here somewhere, and you know, like people who have that back problem now, I forget yes. what it's called, but in his case it was a wound, and he was a very straight man, but his head would not stay up except when he threw it back, threw the upper part of his body back. His head would go back and stay there until he started to move again. But things like that really impressed me, I guess, as a youngster. And so when my turn came to get an education and decide what I wanted to do, originally I was thinking about medicine and teaching. And when my father came back from the war, there was virtually no money, and he was a pharmacist by trade, so he wanted to start his own store, and he chose Castlegar, which is another small place in the interior, not far from Nelson, not far from Trail. So he decided that he would start a store, borrow the necessary money to do so, but had to go and work with another pharmacist for quite a while in order to get caught up on the drugs which had been developed in the war and how they would fit into a pharmacy setup. So he worked for a year in Trail and then opened his store. And part of our problem is all the money we had went to open the store. I worked with him for part of the last summer I was home. And he said, on that basis, he said, I'll pay for your... If you work with me, I'll pay for your first year. After that, you're on your own. And I said, well, I'm on my own after that, and I think I can manage it. So he paid $655 to get into RMC, to Royal Roads, rather, here, which I was in the first Army class to attend Royal Roads, and the first class after the war entered RMC in Kingston. So there was a joint class. Half went to RMC in Kingston, half came to Royal Roads. We did 2 years here, two years in Kingston, and then we came together at RMC for the last 2 years of that four-year course. And it was from there that I went to Korea. But it was one of those things. It was an opportunity to get an education, and a much cheaper education, in a way, provided you qualified, than going to a university. Of the 900-odd of us who applied, I think 186 got through the screening. So, and then we lost about almost half of them during the 4 years for one reason or another. So there was a small number. There was 27 Army graduates went to Korea 6 weeks after graduation from Kingston. There may have been another 10 who chose not to go to Korea, but those of us who chose a permanent commission were all told we would go to Korea. I graduated on the 2nd of June, was commissioned on the 3rd of June, and was in Korea on the 17th of July. So it was a fast transition from academic and college life to the real thing. So.
And did you think at that time that it would be a lifelong career?
I had a very strong feeling it would be. I really didn't entertain any other thoughts until about 4 years into my service, I guess. There began to be a change in commitments made to us about the length of time we would have to serve as lieutenants before promotion to captain. And for some reason, and I still can't figure this out, we were promoted late, and we were promoted only to the acting rank of captain, which meant you didn't go on the seniority list as a captain, you stayed on the lieutenant's list, and you were shown as acting captain. And in the days when seniority was very important for various purposes, like courses and that sort of thing, the loss of a year and a half seniority between the time I was made an acting captain and the time I was confirmed seemed pretty long to a young man. And I then began to think about teaching in medicine again. I never acted on it, but I must say I entertained thoughts of it. Yeah, but it was a great life from my point of view. That slight hiatus in promotion didn't really bother me because the Queen's Own Rifles, as has not been mentioned at this point, was the unit chosen in 1956 to go to the Suez to be the first United Nations Emergency Force unit. Unfortunately, it didn't come off. We moved all the way from Calgary to Halifax in 27 plane loads over a 6-day period only, from the day we were notified to the day all of us were in Halifax. And a few were in Naples as the advance party. It was a period of 6 days, and it was a fast, rapid move, extremely fatiguing, but a very proud accomplishment. The problem was they converted the Magnificent, which was an aircraft carrier, to be a troop ship. So there were rough amenities put aboard for various purposes. And it was decided, the government will say that Nasser at the time objected to name the Queen's Own Rifles, and therefore the contingent had to be changed. Well, at that time, they could have changed it to the Royal Canadian Regiment or Princess Patricia's Canadian Light Infantry or the Royal Highland Regiment or the Canadian Guards and then or the Royal 22nd Regiment, and then there was us. There was really no difference between the Royal connection in almost any of those regiments. What had happened, in my view, despite the government's pronouncement that we were not acceptable because of our name, is that they were so anxious to support Lester Pearson's concept of the United Nations force at the United Nations that year, that they jumped the gun. They sent us down there because we were the largest and, in a sense, the least committed unit at the time. But we had been together for 3 years, so we were a very stable unit and had not just returned from an overseas posting or something like that. We had been in garrison for about 3 years at that point. And were well led, well trained, and we thought we were the guys that should be going. Unfortunately, the government thought different, and I think it was because they realized what they didn't need was a good infantry battalion. They needed people who could support infantry battalions from places like Pakistan or Bangladesh or Colombia or somewhere, whoever made up that force. And so they needed communicators, logisticians, repair people, signals, and a reconnaissance squadron. So we took 6 days to get to Halifax, and we were told to get out of it in 2 days eventually. After 5 weeks, we said, they told us there would be two troop trains here 48 hours from now. Decide what you're going to do, get it done, and get out of here so there's room for the others to come in and occupy the barracks. So we were disappointed as all get out, and the two troop trains headed west, and they dropped people all across the country who were members, and with the orders that they would reform. This was about the 19th of December, I think, we left Halifax. We'd been there 5-6 weeks at that point. And everybody was ticketed from the main line of the CPR to wherever they lived via the CPR and back to the main line to go back to Calgary, which is where we were stationed, or Victoria, where our sister battalion, the 2nd Battalion, had sent us about 240 men to bring us up to strength. We were a large group. And they were ticketed right through to Victoria, most of them, except those who were single and wanted to go off the line somewhere. So we had a disappointing and yet celebratory journey back from Halifax to Calgary and to Victoria and all points in between. But it was a mark that is not very often spoken about. But it gives the regiment particular pride because of all the units that were picked, we were. And we were very capable of doing it, and it was the largest air movement of a unit that had been conducted even during the war, because most of the large movements at that time were done by sea, and the only ones that were moved by air were paratroop units. Well, there was a major assault that the airborne component had done, but not a unit, a regular unit, had flown that distance, that many people over such a short period of time, as a move from home locations to an assembly area and to a departure point. And it was done, and if only we could do the last half of it, it would have been great. But we were changed, in our view, very unfortunately.
And I guess it's something you get used to in the military.
Yeah, you have to, I guess. Although for a young guy that was promoted captain to do it at that time, and that's when my promotion came through 18 months late, but the satisfaction of being a part of that, and I was the adjutant of the unit, which is a key position, and I got very little sleep for those 6 days. My parents came to visit from Castlegar, and all I could do when I left my desk at Curry after about 46 or 72 hours of it, we started to talk and I fell asleep. I just couldn't stay awake. So I woke up and went into the tub to have a bath, and my dad said to Marianne, my wife, "Do you think he's all right in there? I don't hear anything." And he was right. I was asleep, and I could have slipped beneath that tub, I think, the water in that tub, and expired. Nobody would have known the difference. So she came in and said, "What?" So there are great, great memories of service, which not necessarily connected to memorials, but I had a good career.
Yeah, very interesting. Well, thank you.
Happy one.
Thank you so much for
talking
welcome. With me.
You're welcome. I'm delighted that I hope you've got what you need in terms of monument. And we didn't talk a lot about government non-participation, but it's usually on a local arrangement with the Navy or the Air Force or another Army unit, and they will do it as they can. But as far as cash is concerned, from any of the levels of government, no. That wall of remembrance was done, I think, for $360,000, all of which was raised by us, and with enough over to run a bursary. So there is a wall of remembrance bursary, which is given out to two or three people each year.
And the ongoing maintenance, I suppose, as well.
That's looked after. That's looked after by our contract with the cemetery. They were responsible for the design, and it's designed sort of as most cemeteries are, I guess, when they look at things, as being indestructible. This one has stood up very well. As I said, I visited it. It was commissioned 12 years after it was dedicated. And the stones and plaques, the grounds are good, very good shape.
Excellent.
Would you like anything to take away? I can give you one of these.
If you have duplicates of anything, that would be wonderful. And if not, I can perhaps borrow something and bring it back.
Those are yours to keep.
Okay, thank you.
I do have a duplicate of this.
And that's the parachute battalion.
That's the mountain one.
Right.
And there's the picture, which is very meaningful. And there's the inscription.
Oh, how lovely.
Yeah.
That's
at the parking lot. So I can give you that. That's a pretty complete business about the wall.
The wall, yes.
I didn't have detailed involvement in this one. If you wanted to take this,
that's the statue in Ottawa.
This was in Ottawa,
yeah.
And this is the part that we played principally. Where did I see it? Remarks by Belzeal and Pitts. He spoke in French and I spoke in English. So there's a picture of it. You see, this is Sheila Kopp's letter when they mailed them out to us. Yeah, there's not a lot of pictorial stuff there.
I wonder, there may be something online that has a picture of it too.
It gives you some background. I'd like that back, if you don't mind.
Yes, certainly.
If you feel you want to take it, or you might be able to pull it up online.
I don't know. Right. Maybe I'll try to find it online. And if
all right,
I have trouble,
that's probably the best.
I'll get in touch and
this is pictured. I'm not sure. Well, it must
be
somewhere.
Yes, there's the wall.
Yeah, there it is.
Wall of remembrance there
yeah.
in the brochure. Yeah.
There's two verses here. One is, they shall grow not old as we that are left grow old. The other is a verse which is written by a member of the Princess Patricia's Canadian Light Entry. That's it. That's on one side. This is just a poem which was written by a private who was killed the next day, I think.
Oh.
There's a list of all the casualties that are commemorated. One of the interesting, really sad things, sad ones, there's a couple of people that were killed with me, but is Gower. Philip Gower is a major, and he's the last person to expire or die in the war. See, that's well after the ceasefire, but he had been there in Korea for a year on the peace commission, East Queen's Own. He flew home, phoned his wife from Vancouver, she was living in Calgary, and said, I'll see you in a couple of hours. His plane slammed into Mount Slessie in the coastal range, and all the people on board were killed. They've never recovered the bodies. It's left up in the top of that mountain as a protected area. But it's so sad, after a year, and then he was in contact The family went to meet him, and of course the plane didn't come in, never arrived.
Very sad.
And he was a decorated soldier. He had the Military Cross, which is that one, same as mine, for service in the landing with the Royal Winnipeg Rifles, which was a component of the same force that the Queen's Own were in, so on. When he had a chance to join the regular army after the war, he chose rifles, and that's where he ended up. This I can't really separate. That's the only one I've got. If
yes,
you
no,
wanted
that's,
to copy it, but
that's
you've,
okay,
because
there's
it.
The picture in
yeah,
the brochure
you've got it there,
of the
yeah.
Wall of Remembrance.
Yeah.
That's great.
Okay.
Wonderful. Thank you again.
You're very welcome. And I hope it's what you need for your project. Or at least part of what you need.
Very useful, yes.
You want these?
Oh, I'd love
you
these.
You can have
the
those.
Picture of the
they're
children.
They're not the expensive copies. They're sort of the quick copies.
Yes, that's wonderful.
Yeah, there's a picture of them in their Queen's Own kit, the
oh,
bottom
yeah.
here, with their hat
badges.
Yes,
the t-shirts and the ball caps.
Yeah.
Isn't that super? And their brooms sweeping around the monument.
Yep.
That's excellent. Thank you.
Okay.